You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You are listening to Sound Poetry, KTAH 101.9 FM Radio Tacoma. And I am your host, David Gilmore. Very happy this morning to have Roseanne Olson with us, who is going to read a number of poems from her collected works for a new chapbook that she's expecting to have published. And we wish you luck with that, Roseanne. Roseanne's from North Dakota, I believe, originally. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Correct.
And has worked as a photographer with many, many awards. She's been in Graphis magazine many, many times. The Communication Arts has published works of her writings. She's also found in Paris PX3, which is unknown to me, but maybe you can say something about that. But her work recently is in also song. She's become an Americana. Is it Americana style?
I would say sort of narrative folk songs.
Narrative folk. So you're a creature of the 60s, you said at one point, as many of us old timers are. But we'd like you to start off with a poem. Let's hear your voice ringing and welcome to Sound Poetry, Roseanne.
Okay, so this is a poem I wrote about babyhood, about my father. It's called Father Balances Daughter on Single Hand. We are young in this CPS snapshot. My father holds me upright on his outstretched hand, balanced like a top. He in his white cuffed shirt and I in a ruffled baby costume. I'm smiling, he intense, as if juggling knives or swallowing fire, a circus act of family proportions. Laughter fills the living room. Aunts, uncles, and grandparents clap their hands. Mother walks into the room in her checkered apron, picks up the camera, clicks the shutter. In this split-second picture, we are caught forever in a moment of joy, a trapeze artist stalled mid-air.
Yes, there you also have the motif of the taking of a snapshot, a picture.
I think that's something that connects it all.
Yes, but at the same time, you go from something very animated to something that we have to imagine is caught in a frozen moment, which is a very nice contrast to have in thinking about this sort of imagery. If only we knew how we're balanced like a top so often in our parents' hands, how would we feel if we were that precariously balanced? Huh?
I think that's true, both, you know, in my case, both physically. My dad used to balance me on his hand, but also, you know, emotionally balanced or held like a top and hoping that we'll stay upright.
Right. We have some other poems, I think, where you bring in the camera or photographic imagery, which is, I guess, a motif of your, a mark of your work. Do you have sometimes in mind a photograph from which you draw your poetry?
Oh, absolutely. My family was very much about photographing everything with a Super 8 camera or still camera. And even my grandfather on my father's side, my paternal grandfather and my maternal grandmother both photographed and developed pictures in their kitchens, which many people did back in the early days of photography. So photography, it really sets sort of this history book of my life. I have old family albums with me.
Do you keep them out of the light so that they don't fade?
Yes, I do.
I know when I have opened some of ours that there's such fading, especially on the color
Yeah,
images.
the color images really do change in character. Yeah.
Well,
Yeah,
let's
they're
go
such
on
good
to
reminders,
something.
though.
Let's go on to a scrapbook, which is sometimes what we put our pictures in.
Exactly. So this is called Scrapbook. It's a story about my mother. Her last good memory of being kissed. It hadn't died completely, but soon. She presses down on the sewing machine pedal, hurrying three Easter dresses to the finish. She dissolves into the hum of the machine, the monotony of the thread or needle drawing the thread. She pricks her finger, watches blood spread like disappointment across the lofty skirt of polished cotton. She flips the fabric, catches herself in the mirror, hair uncombed, pale mouth, puckers her lips to a kiss. It's fake, but something at least. In 2 days, her girls will smile for the family camera, goose-bumped legs framed by frilly socks, snow just out of sight. The photograph will lie, as usual. People will think that everything was all right.
The lie of the photograph. Are photographs fake?
No, I don't think photographs are fake, but I think they can lie. And it all depends. In fact, I wrote a paper about this when I was in graduate school. But you can, wherever you frame the image and you stop the action, you are, as a photographer or a poet or a writer, deciding what the viewer will see and experience. And things can be framed to tell a story that is not necessarily true, or maybe not necessarily completely true. I think that now, these days, with Photoshop, we can create false realities completely. So, yeah, it can lie, but it can also be a truth teller.
Right. People often think, looking at a picture, that, wow, everything's all right in their world, and yet we don't know the half.
Right, exactly.
So, did you study also that famous essay of Walter Benjamin on the introduction of photographic arts into the art world?
No, I didn't. I'd love to see that.
That one's in his Illusions collection. It was published, I think, after his death. But there is the famous one of Susan Sontag in
Oh,
her
yeah, Frozen again.
interpretation book. Did you know that one? On Photography, I think it's called. Very interesting. Both of them have a very similar appeal, but the essays are both well known as kind of landmarks of consideration of the place of photography in art.
I'll definitely have to take a look at that.
So your mother, was she a seamstress?
Oh, she was a wonderful seamstress. She still is. She's a quilter. She's 94.
Quilting at 94.
Yes.
Yes, in North
And
Dakota.
driving. And no, she's in two places. The South West and in North Dakota, but
Okay.
she's just bought a new car, so
Well, that image goes back quite a long way, though.
yes, these
Represented there.
are these are childhood poems, working out things,
Yes.
examining, yes.
And you have some more family life that is about the motor trip
Oh,
on
yes.
across the West.
Actually, this is a trip that we still laugh about. It was amazing. My father would never stop for us to eat. It's called Across the West. We sail through the desert in our Chevy Impala, three girls squeezed into the back seat, red velour prickling our sweaty legs, windows open, the wind tearing at our hair. In front, our parents are separated by miles, their migraines festering into a glaze of silence, This is our family vacation. Lunch, calls my father into the rearview mirror as he speeds past the only roadside diner in 100 miles. We skid to a halt at Bryce Canyon, where he pulls out his Winstons and taps his watch. 15 minutes, he says. Then on to Hoover Dam, where the parking lot shimmers and sticks to our shoes. My sister's Instamatic camera melts onto the back shelf of our car. Shadows grow long. Somewhere down the road, a neon sign blinks against the darkening sky. Diner, diner, diner.
Reminiscent of many road trips, I'm sure families have taken, where you just hope there's going to be a stopping place soon,
exactly,
whether for eating or picnicking or just to get out of the car, right?
Exactly.
And yeah, parents always seem to have time for a cigarette if they have to stop for 15 quick minutes to have a cigarette, right?
Exactly. But
to get you a hamburger, maybe not.
That costs money.
Right. Yeah. Very familiar picture to me. I was in Utah and you didn't leave too much on the dash or on the back window because of that melting with the old brownie camera that gets so misshapen it's not usable anymore.
All right. We got a good laugh out of that.
There's no mention other than the title of the person Pandora.
Right.
The imagery will tell something of the Pandora motifs, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Pandora's box. So this is called Pandora. Take this box, please. It contains my ashes. No, not ashes quite yet. But what do I call this life before death? Lift the latch. I've opened it many times myself, have plunged in deeply. But afterward, when I glance at the mirror, my eyes are rimmed in darkness with the task of it all. Try it. You'll find a ruler, of course. Measurement is important, plus one stamp of approval, seldom used. There's a rusty razor or two, accompanied by shreds of self, a few scraps of paper scribbled with words that have failed me, a picture of my mother, looking with sepia eyes through pain passed on like a genetic code. And finally, at my farthest reach, heavy weights that hold my heart prisoner, just in case I wanted to drift happily away.
Have you experienced the Pandora experience?
I would say this is my description of the Pandora experience for myself.
Yes, your own, drawing from it the objects that had meaning.
Right, and more than you would hope for, more than you would expect, just looking at the box.
Yes. Yes, Pandora and the box containing, well, sometimes all sorts of unimaginable things. Certainly it was in the mythology of the ancient Greeks, but we can modernize things, as you've done there very nicely. A modern Pandora. And luckily, forgiveness. This is the title that you wish to have, right?
This
of your pieces.
This is the title for my collection of poems. Luckily, forgiveness. The knotted rope that whipped her lovely back was not enough. So she tried the hair shirt, slipping one thin arm at a time into each nettlesome sleeve. She thought of suffering monks, but what worked for them didn't work for her. She needed more. So she located a bed of nails, lowering her dress to present her flesh to the rusty, bloodied spikes. But the pain was just an irritation. Still not satisfied, she walked 100 miles to the glowering bed of coals. Surely this, she thought, as the curious gathered round. But luckily, as she stepped from her worn slippers, she heard a voice cry out from the crowd, "Forgiveness, forgiveness. Have you ever thought of that?"
So that makes us think of what there is need of forgiveness for.
Right.
Having such mortifications that increasingly more dangerous, perhaps, or injurious. Mm-hmm. No end to those sometimes for someone riddled with guilt.
Or pain. Yep.
And pain, yes. To take the pain away, to feel more pain. Yeah.
Yes.
Right. The lesser pain overcome by the greater. So, yeah, forgiveness. What forgiveness we need.
Again.
Well, this isn't a leftover poem, but it has a title that's kind of interesting in that way.
Right. I have we grew up in North Dakota where people are very quiet. And I always feel like there are so many stories to be told, but they don't necessarily get told. So this is a kind of compilation of what would happen at a dinner with everybody gathered. It's called Leftovers. Sit we do, politely so, hands mute upon white napkins spread across our laps. It's been years since we dined together, but gathered now for grandmother's sake, we talk of the weather, the price of wheat, the tenderness of the pot roast, until our eyes focus downward at remains smudged on our plates. Oh, deliver us, someone, with a knock-knock joke or an old tale of uncle lost in the snow. Even lies are welcome. But silence swallows us, words caught like crumbs in our throats. We shift in our chairs and finally rise to pack our stories yet untold, leftovers for another time.
Yes, that's a very nice idea, the swallowers silenced. Silence swallows.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. This goes back quite a long way. I mean, today you think of people around tables, and what do you see? If you go to a restaurant, quite likely you'll see people not speaking quite so much, but huddled over on their phones with their thumbs going. And I often look around and think, gosh, there's never a cessation of this kind of attention elsewhere.
Right. It's sort of an avoidance of conversation, as a matter of fact. And we, especially families are full of rich stories. And so devolving into silence was always such an uncomfortable place to be when everybody was wishing that the stories would be told.
Yes. So you gathered for the grandmother's sake. How old was your grandmother when you went?
Well, this particular, I think this happened a number of times, but I remember one time, especially we gathered for her 80th birthday, I think. And we, grandchildren came in from all over the country, and we gathered in her little living room. And for about 15 minutes, everybody talked excitedly, and then everybody became silent. It was amazing. My husband was there. And he was amazed. He's from an Irish family. I'm from a Scandinavian family. The Irish have the gift of gab much more than Scandinavians, I guess.
Some people do actually have a rule about not speaking while people eat. Things that you wish were going on that aren't going on. As you point out here, this is a quiet, very quiet poem, but of wondering. What can we say? What should we say? Yes. So we go on with another of your poems that is a direction called Trajectory.
Right. So the collection of poems is divided into two parts. And the second part is called Love in Your Country. And there's a sort of different flavor to these poems, slightly. This is called, as you said, Trajectory. On the ultrasound, there appeared a ragged sphere of darkness, out of which spun all things, her long-suffered past, the present sharp as a pin, and a future more nebulous now that the doctor has spoken. A biopsy was recommended. She headed home, aware of the universe that swirled within, playing a game of what if. What if she had spoken her mind all those years instead of clamping her feelings between her teeth? What if she had danced on tables, sung at the top of her lungs, eaten frosting before cake? But what if didn't matter? We will all be gone one day, she consoled herself. Even the stars in the Milky Way, even the sun. She began to sing as she walked, the trees clacking in rhythm. She was aware of everything, and everything was brilliant.
Moves very nicely from dark moments to a brightness at the end. It opens, yes. That reminded me of a Mary Oliver line where she says, I'm so happy to be alive in this world. I would like to live forever, but I'm content not to.
That's wonderful. We have to be content not to.
I think so.
I heard a great quote on, I was watching a documentary about Keith Richards on Netflix or Amazon or something like that. And he said, about getting older, he said, you know, young people, they never want to get old, but they don't want to die young either.
Yeah. And of course, he came very close to it many times, dying young.
Yeah.
I did listen to his book read by himself called Alive.
Yes, Alive.
Alive. My darling. Now, like this word darling, what do you think of the word darling yourself?
Oh, I love the word darling. I think the protagonist in this poem is writing a letter to her loved one. And there are times I call my husband darling, or somebody I love, I'll call them darling, just because I feel like it's a term of endearment. And it's got a little slight twist of, it could be used in a way like, oh, darling, would you take out the garbage? But in this case, it's my darling who I love. My darling, did I tell you that spring has reached us again? Tulips at the edge of the garden bloom like babies whose pink cheeks I can't help but touch with my own. What can I say? I never expected to live this long, not even past 30, but I have. And now the lilacs are so sweet, and the sky. I didn't know then what I do now about life, about what matters. This morning, tinged with the last breath of winter, I sipped tea and followed the sunrise as the cat bathes herself in a puddle of golden light.
Yes. You are moving into brightness and light through the second half of your poem, it seems.
Right, and I think there's a realization in this that it's the little things that comprise a life, you know, the light, the cat, the tea, the lilacs.
tulips.
You know, the details, yeah.
Yes, yes. Do you talk about crossing over in the sense of, is it just an open metaphor, crossing over?
Well, I see it as a having more than one meaning. Crossing over could be crossing over into the next life, from life to death, or it crossing over could be taking an opportunity to do something different and new in life. So it's a double metaphor here. Crossing over. We agree. We could pack the car with all we need. Say au revoir. Take the rugs, the art, balls of twine, the bedding, the books, boxes of wine, the queen and the rooks, the wind and the chimes. And we could cross over, cross over, cross over. The river so deep, water so silver, to start a new life. Will it all carry over? Old friends in the mirror, new friends going forward. It's not only you, not only me. It's the scythe getting close to our sun-ripened wheat. Did I tell you I love you? What more must there be as we sit in the morning with the cat and our tea? It's the you of you and the me of me, the loft of the clouds, the curl of the sea, the ache and the tears, the long-held dreams, the dark of the night, the sun in the east.
There again, the motif of the darkness and the sun is your final note in the poem and verse. Yes. So, in the arts, is often questioned as a deterioration rather than an enhancement.
Right, or ridiculed, exactly.
Yeah. Can we close our discussion and your readings with the first lesson?
Yes. First lesson. I knew you were in trouble, walking as you did onto the ice that still covered the pond near our old cabin. It was March, for God's sake. The pale crocuses were just beginning to rise out of the snow. I tagged along, thinking you knew better, but I was wrong. You were oblivious, talking about furniture, about how you wanted to decorate the house and paint the walls in colors of spring, green, pink, robin's egg. I guess you didn't notice how bright the sky, how thin the ice, when you fell through. I suddenly had no choice but to reach out to rescue you. You, you. Then I remembered the first lesson from my life-saving class in junior high about how a drowning person will pull you under, and how you have to decide to let there be one drown or two.
A little comic element in that one, although a dangerous moment in the person's life on the thin ice. It's sort of the thought that, well, the reason I didn't jump in at first, darling, you have to realize my position. Sometimes darling is used in that way, to trying to cover up. But yes, why, how do you do this and not risk your own life too?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
Roseanne Olson, I've been very, very happy to hear your readings, as many of the listeners will agree. You perform them very well. There's moments of bright sunshine that we all need at this particular time. But we come out of darkness so often, and that is the necessary movement from the dark into the light. Thank you very much for joining us and participating, Roseanne.
Thank you so much. It's been lots of fun.
This is Sound Poetry. I've been your host, David Gilmore, with Roseanne Olson. Thank you. That was good.
Thank you.